Yes, the presentation will be done by Nikki, but I think there was a request because as I said, Nikki is very used to very long and detailed negotiations, and she's just returned from London after a very long session again. But we have she will just present the big highlights of some of the issues that we're talking about. But just in a broad overview, the minister, as you know, has been engaging from day one on this matter, and he has given the team, well, both him and actually the UK minister, have given the technical team, he's told them they must finalize all the matters because they want to sign in the first week of, in early March, so that we have that two weeks to play with and not end up like the rest of the no deal is ending up, but that we have a deal in place. Minister has emphasized that, so the team has been working very hard. Nikki will go through it, but it looks like there is one or two small technical issues still outstanding. As I said, we still need to protect our citrus industry and so on, but she will take you through, but it's hoping that the plan is that we will, in early March, the minister would want to finalize the agreement.
Thank you, DG, and thank you, Chair. I'll just give a quick context to the negotiations. As you know, the UK has invoked Article 50, so they will be leaving the EU as of the 29th of March 2019. The EU and the UK have been negotiating the exit agreement. That agreement has been agreed between the EU and the cabinet. The UK cabinet has approved the deal, but the UK parliament has rejected the deal that is currently on the table. So the UK Prime Minister May is currently talking to the EU and see if there can be renegotiation of some of the issues. But if that does not happen and the withdrawal agreement is not approved, or if the period is not extended, so the UK can also request for extension of the period of 2 years, if that does not happen, they will leave on the 29th of March 2019 without a withdrawal agreement with the EU. That means that in the context of our agreement that we have with the EU, so the SADC-EPA Economic Partnership Agreement, that agreement will then not apply to the UK anymore. So our preferential access into the UK market will then be not in place, and we will have to pay the MFN duty, so the normal most favoured nation duties that's in place for all countries. So the purpose of our discussions with the UK on the rollover agreement is to ensure that there is no interruption of our trade with the UK if they leave the EU. The big issue for us, and I will go into what is the outstanding issues, what we've already agreed in terms of the agreement, is that at this stage, it seems the UK will be leaving without an agreement, and that means that our rollover agreement, so our standalone agreement between SACL, so South Africa, Botswana, Eswatini, Lesotho, and Namibia, and Mozambique, that is part of this group, is not in place, so it's not signed and ratified by Parliament by the 29th of March, then our exporters would have to pay duties. Our top exports is commodities, so of course platinum and gold, that currently does not have any duties, also on a most favoured nation basis in the EU and therefore in the UK in the future. But our third biggest export is vehicles, and if we will have to pay the normal duty that everyone else pays, then we will have to pay 10% duty on that product. That's where currently we are exporting duty-free. There's also some of our agricultural exports, citrus, grapes, and so forth, where a duty between 4% and 15% will become applicable if we have to pay duties in the UK. And the UK takes 40% of our agricultural exports. So it will have an impact on the industry. In terms of the rollover agreement, we have agreed on the main text. So the main text is in place. Most of the provisions is agreed in this rollover agreement, as well as the annexes. In terms of the tariff rate quotas, so as you are aware, all of the other countries in the SADC EPA group receives duty-free, quota-free treatment from the EU, but South Africa is not receiving the same treatment. So on some products we have duty-free treatment, but on some products we have tariff rate quotas. And it's all on agricultural products, the tariff rate quotas. These we had to renegotiate with the UK as standalone quotas. So these quotas have been agreed with the UK. The quotas that we have in place with the EU will stay in place as it is, so the volumes will stay as it currently is, but we will have separate volumes that has now been agreed with the UK. In terms of the products that's covered under the TRQs, it is some dairy products, very important sugar. And if I can mention that for sugar, we have 150,000 ton duty-free treatment into the EU. The UK, in terms of the UK TRQ, it will be about 70,000. So this is an additional 70,000 duty-free treatment that we will be receiving once this agreement comes into effect. On wine, we had 110 million litre duty-free quota into the EU. With the UK, we've agreed on a standalone TRQ of 70 million litre. So there would be additional 70 million litres that will go to duty-free then to the UK. We also have some other products like canned fruit, frozen orange juice, apple juice, and so forth. Maybe just one thing, there was a mistake when this slide was produced. So the flour lines, it's not subject to TRQs anymore. They're all duty-free now. So they go duty-free, quota-free into the EU, and we'll do the same when the UK agreement comes into effect. Yes, it applies to all flowers. In terms of the big issues that was discussed, and still some of them are still outstanding, the major issue is cumulation. So if you will remember, in terms of the agreement that we have with the EU, the SACO countries, so South Africa and the other countries in the region, can cumulate with other countries, other African, Caribbean and Pacific countries. So we can take products from, say, Mauritius, and you can use it in the input of a product in South Africa and then export it to the EU, and it will meet the rule of origin for the preferential treatment. We can also bilaterally accumulate with the EU. So we can take a product from the EU, material from the EU, use it in production in South Africa, and then export that product to the EU under the preference it will meet the rule of origin. So the EU material is seen as South African material in terms of the accumulation provision. The issue now is that the UK will be leaving the EU. So they will not then be able to accumulate with products from the EU, and South Africa as well will not be able to accumulate with products from the EU to go to the UK. So we have to deal with how we're going to deal with that accumulation issue. What is required to be able to accumulate with countries, other countries outside of the agreement, is that those countries have had a trade agreement. And currently, as you know, as we just said, the UK and the EU does not yet have a trade agreement with one another. We do not know what would be the trade agreement in future. So there is a problem at this stage to agree to South Africa or SACO and Mozambique and the UK accumulating with materials and processes in the EU, and to try and overcome that issue, because both South Africa and the UK will be impacted because we are using materials of the EU. So some of our products might have a problem then to meet the rule of origin. We are proposing that there's a transitional arrangement where for a three-year period that may be extended, cumulation will be allowed between South Africa, the UK and the EU. This is still the specifics of this transitional arrangement is still being negotiated, and the conditions under which this would be allowed is still being finalized. So as soon as this is done, then except for one other outstanding issue that I will come to, then the agreement will be finalized and we will be able to go to signature and ratification. The other big issue that came up in the negotiations was the Cotonou Agreement. So the EU has got the agreement called the Cotonou Agreement with African, Caribbean and Pacific states. And if the UK leaves the EU, this Cotonou Agreement will not be applicable to the UK anymore. And the issue was how to reflect some provisions in the Cotonou Agreement then in the standalone agreement between SACU and Mozambique and the UK. Some of the Cotonou provisions does not apply to South Africa because we have a separate agreement on trade development and cooperation with the EU. So what we've agreed is on an annex that incorporates some of the provisions of the Cotonou Agreement and that makes very clear which of these provisions will not apply to South Africa. The Cotonou Agreement is being renegotiated between the ACP countries, so the African, Caribbean and Pacific countries, and the EU, and it will fall away by the end of 2020, and a new agreement will come in its place. So we've agreed in this annex on the Cotonou that we will also review this annex then in light of the review of the Cotonou Agreement once we know what was decided in terms of that agreement. On the Trade and Development and Cooperation Agreement, as I've mentioned, we have a separate agreement that deals with development and cooperation with the EU. We've agreed to roll over the provisions of that agreement into a protocol on the TDCA or the relations of the TDCA to the standalone agreement, and we will negotiate a bilateral development cooperation framework with the UK, between South Africa and the UK during the transitional period in this agreement to take care of those aspects, the trade and the cooperation aspects that's not covered by the Economic Partnership Agreement. Then we've agreed on a transitional arrangement. The purpose of this transitional arrangement is to ensure that there's continuity in terms of the trade. So we want to preserve existing value chains. That's where the accumulation issue is very relevant. We want to ensure that certificates of origin that is issued under the SADC EPA by the EU will be accepted under this rollover agreement for a period of time to enable operators to get new certificates so there's no interruption of trade, that we will use the same stamps for a period that the permits and licenses and certificates that's issued by the EU now at this stage will be accepted by the UK for a period of time also to enable operators then to get new permits, licenses and certificates. The big outstanding issue in terms of this is on SPS, so sanitary and phytosanitary measures, where we are still discussing how to deal with our current establishment listings in the EU. So the European Union has got rules and regulations in terms of agriculture, what products you can export to them, under which conditions. And we had to go through long processes for many years of dealing with the EU to get the right to export, for example, our citrus or grapes to the EU, some of our game meat. So we want to ensure that once the UK has got their own legislation, that they will have on 29 March, if they leave the EU without an agreement, that we will still be able to export without interruption, at least for a period of time, to enable us then to apply under this new arrangement new legislation of the UK then for the right to export. So that issue is still outstanding and is still being discussed as well between SACU, Mozambique and the UK. On geographical indications, we have agreed with South Africa and the UK. This is a bilateral protocol in the Economic Partnership Agreement. We've agreed to roll over the protection currently in this protocol for South Africa's wines and spirits and our agricultural products like rooibos tea. And we will also roll over the current protection being provided for the United Kingdom geographical indications that is contained in this protocol. We've also agreed that in the built-in agenda, some of the technical issues that we're currently discussing with the EU in terms of some of our wine-making practices and so forth, we will also discuss under the built-in agenda with the UK to ensure that these issues is also solved in terms of our trade with the United Kingdom. In terms of the built-in agenda, as I've indicated, we have recognized that there's some important work that we still need to finalize. There was also an issue that the UK could not negotiate any new agreement. So they can't negotiate new provisions. That is not the same as what we have under the EU Economic Partnership Agreement. So there is some issues that we want to take up with the United Kingdom as soon as they are able to negotiate new agreements. And as soon as the rollover agreement is in place and we know that there would be continuity, we can discuss some of the issues that we did not manage to finalize. So that would be like updating our tariff schedules, exploring a permanent arrangement on cumulation that will preserve the existing value chains between South Africa, the EU, and the UK. Also reviewing our tariff rate quotas, so we want to talk again about the TRQs that is in place or the preferential treatment that's given to those products, the time frame for safeguards, export taxes. We want to have a discussion again on the provisions on export taxes and on the provision for TRQ management, the tariff rate quota management. As you know, we've raised this before, there's some issue in terms of how this is managed, as is set out in the agreement, for some of our products like wheat on the first-come, first-served basis, and we want to address that in the built-in agenda. Then in terms of the way forward, as I've the DG has just indicated, we had a session last week for the we were meeting as the SADC or as SACO in Mozambique with the United Kingdom trying to finalize all of the outstanding issues in the agreement. Unfortunately, there's still the two issues that we could not agree on, cumulation and how to treat some SPS-related issues. And what we've agreed is that there would be another engagement at technical level on Friday, and then there would be potentially an engagement by ministers of SACO in Mozambique and the UK on Monday to try and resolve the outstanding issues. If we can resolve it and the agreement is then finalized, we will have we would look at a joint legal scrubbing. The intention was to have it next week. Since we are still finalizing some outstanding issues, that might have to move to the week after. But then the aim is to sign the agreement early in March. We will have to then immediately bring it to Parliament to go through the ratification process for this agreement to enter, if needed, into force on the 29th of March 2019. If the UK leaves the EU without an agreement, the entering into force provision that we've negotiated, that's in the rollover agreement, makes it clear that the rollover agreement will enter into force on the day that the economic partnership agreement with the EU does not apply to the UK anymore. And currently that would be on the 29th of March, but then another requirement, of course, is that the agreement would have to be ratified by that stage. Otherwise, it will only enter into force at the time after we have ratified the agreement. Thank you, Chair. If there's any questions, then I try to be as quick as possible, so apologies if I maybe miss some of the issues.
Covered them all. I just want, before we engage, just clarify this issue of early March, because I'm looking at our parliamentary programme. Early March meaning what? Because we're rising on the 20th, as you know. We're rising on that date. Meaning, if we wanted it to go through, we'd need to have it to go through on Tuesday, 12th, 13th March, here, to go into Parliament the following week. I just thought I should alert you to that. Right. Let's open up for engagement. Honourable Elberts, Honourable Buyani, at the moment the two of you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I think it's difficult to negotiate something under these uncertain circumstances on what type of Brexit we're facing with. It looks like a hard Brexit. I might have missed some of it in your presentation. I'd just like to know, in terms of the agreement that you're working on right now, would you say that it's a better agreement with the UK if you compare it to the EPA, and that in the future we could actually get more out of a bilateral relationship with the UK than was before? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Elberts. Honourable Buyani.
Chair, thanks. Mine's just a clarity-seeking question in terms of the presentation. The EU agreement usually bars member states not to sign trade agreement while they have processes in place. So I just wanted to check, because there's Article 50. How will the deal be signed in March under the circumstances or under this rule? Then the second, what about the SA exports to UK, which may be further exported from UK to EU in terms of the rule of the origin? That is what I wanted to check. Also, how the agreement is going to assist South Africa in terms of balance of trade. Now, those are the things, Chair.
Thank you very much. Are there any other comments or questions? Not at the moment. Over to yourself, Ms. Kruger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In terms of the questions from the Honourable Esther Huizen, is this a better agreement? Albert. if this is a better agreement. As I've indicated, the UK could not negotiate, and as has been said, cannot negotiate a new agreement while they are part of the European Union. So what the UK and the EU has agreed to some extent is that the UK can, while they are still part of the EU, and in this period before 29 March, they can have discussions on rollover agreements or on continuity agreements with those countries that the EU currently has an agreement. So they have to replicate that agreement to the extent possible. So it was not possible to negotiate new provisions in this agreement. What we did get in addition is the new volumes in terms of the TRQs. So these TRQs on those products, this would be additional access that we will have now into the UK that falls outside of the current TRQs that we have with the EU. And that is why we included the built-in agenda, because there is specific issues that we want to discuss with the UK and maybe see if there's some provisions in the agreement that we can change or provide some differences in terms of treatment on some products. That we can only do once they leave the EU officially. The issue on whether it would be better to have a bilateral relation, as think the advantages of having a bilateral relationship with the UK outside of the EU is that the UK would be able to put in place their own trade policy measures. They would be able to put in place their own sanitary and phytosanitary measures. So currently the European Union decides on what should be the export-import conditions for agricultural products for the whole of the EU, and they take into account the conditions that is relevant in all of the EU. So for citrus, for example, Spain and Portugal produce citrus, and therefore there would be specific sanitary and phytosanitary measures that's put in place to protect plant health and animal health and protect other issues as well. But when the UK leaves, the UK will have to look at what's the conditions in the UK. They don't produce citrus. So should they have the same sort of measures in place that currently cost our industry 1.8 billion rand a year to meet the requirements to export to the UK, to the EU. So those are the sort of issues where it might be to our advantage if the UK is not part of the EU. In terms of how our exports would be affected when it goes to the UK, and from there it goes to the EU. In terms of the rules of origin, it will not be the rules of origin that we've negotiated is exactly the same. So whether you export a product from directly to the European Union or whether you export a product to the UK, the same rules of origin will apply. What would be a problem if the UK leaves the EU without a trade deal, is that when we export the product to the UK, and the UK then wants to, a company in the UK wants to take that product that we exported to them and export it to the EU, they're going to pay a duty, because there would be duties in place between the EU and the UK. That's not currently in place. Currently there's a free flow of goods. So there may be an impact in terms of how we are currently sending our products, you know, to the EU and the UK. So that is something that companies would have to consider, whether you want to send it directly to the UK or to the EU and how to deal with that. And then in terms of our balance of trade, we have a negative trade balance if we look at the whole of the EU. But if we look at the UK individually, we have a positive trade balance. And it's increased significantly in 2018. So our current trade balance on the latest figures we have from TradeMap, and we will still have to go and verify that, is that our trade balance is about $1.5 billion, positive trade balance in our trade with the UK. So they are a big market for some of our manufactured products like motor vehicles, but as I also said earlier, about 40% of our fresh fruit products goes to the UK as well. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, Chief Director. I see Honourable Kichali, and I'm not sure if I saw your hand, Honourable Matlobo. Honourable Matlobo, Honourable Buyani.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I want to ask a broader question which goes beyond the current status of specific line-by-line negotiations. The Governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, very recently spoke about the dangers of the Chinese slowdown of an order of perhaps 3% reduction, which will probably knock off about, he said, 1% of global activity. Now, while there is a need for more inclusive rules, this slowdown could well have the risk of turning countries inward, which will of course affect growth and prosperity. And I'd be interested in your It's a difficult question to answer, but your fee, because you're close to the negotiations, what your take on this is? Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Kicharia. Honorable Ms. Lobo.
No, thanks, Chair. Maybe from our side, let's just probably get an indication from the DG, like we're giving our timelines now, that in as much as we need to commend the Minister that with the team we are working so hard trying to tie these things, at least to have an in-principle kind of an agreement on the existing agreements in terms of, let me call it, it's more like portation from one service to the other. And it's a very good thing because we are becoming more proactive. And then the built-in kind of agenda you can deal with afterwards because of the legal implication of the still existing membership of the UK there. Let's thank the team on that, that you are doing that well, and hoping that the issues that you are still saying are sticky issues, you'll be able to find a middle ground. And we trust the South African team that you are hard-nosed kind of negotiators. We can negotiate so that at least we can get the best deal out of this because it will have an impact. But let's have a sense, DG, that and probably from our side we can also make a provision, Chair, that immediately it has been concluded. I would suppose DG tells to via cabinet quickly, then because it can't come here without cabinet approving it. But we will have to try to find a mechanism just to make a provision, including probably advising the minister and the chair of our committee, advising the speaker and our chief whip, so that at least we can try to squeeze this before we rise, because some of us, we need to go and speak and get mandate on the ground again. But it's not a question, it's just to have a sense whether we'll be able to pull through. But if we miss that deadline, because I suppose the parliamentary program to say when are we rising up has been adopted already, to spend extra time here, Comrade DG, will not be probably an easy thing to happen. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Maslobo, Honourable Buyani.
Maybe the last one. I just wanted to check the impact on the regional economic development vis-à-vis the agreement with the EU. I guess there's this regional integration. So I wanted to check whether what is the impact on the regional wise? Because earlier on I spoke about the South African. Thanks.
Oh, right. That seems. Over to you again, Chief Director, Ms. Kruger. Thank you, Chair. In terms of the question asked by the Honourable Macharlie, of course, I think the current Chinese slowdown is having an impact on the global economy. And we are seeing that that countries are becoming more inward-looking for many reasons, not just because there is a slowdown in the global economy, and it does make negotiations more difficult, especially with some of our partners. The United Kingdom, however, has indicated that their trade policy, once they are able to set their own trade policy when they leave the EU, will be more open than what the EU's got. So they want to open, they want to have more trade agreements with partners, they want to have more a better relationship or a mutually beneficial relationship with their trading partners. So I don't think the Chinese slowdown will specifically maybe impact our relationship with the UK. What the impact will be from the UK leaving the EU, and especially leaving the EU without the trade deal, we will have to see. It will have an impact, and we will have to see how it also affects then possibly our trade for a period. But yeah, I think that in short. In terms of the question from the Honourable Bihani, I think in terms of the impact on regional trade agreements, one of the issues that I'm sure that you are aware of is that in terms of the economic partnerships agreement, many countries in Africa have raised concerns that the economic partnerships that the EU negotiated did not assist regional integration. It made us more fragmented, because even as SADC, the Southern Africa Development Community, we did not negotiate an agreement as the bloc of 15 countries. We negotiated an agreement as six, and a number of the SADC countries negotiated under other arrangements and some under a further arrangement. So we were divided into three in SADC by the European Union. They decided how to and which sort of blocks they would be negotiating. And these are issues that we are raising as Africa with the European Union in the negotiations currently for the new Cotonou Agreement. These are issues that is also coming up, and how the European Union can more assist in terms of our regional integration. Unfortunately, what we're doing now is we're rolling over the agreements that's in place. So we are rolling over the same sort of fragmentation that we are having in Africa now in terms of our economic or trade relationships with the European Union. We're rolling over that to the United Kingdom. But in future, once the UK can negotiate their own agreements, once we have the African Continental Free Trade Agreement in place, of course there would be an opportunity maybe to review what all of the agreements that we have with the United Kingdom and see how we can deal with that going forward. What's very important is that the United Kingdom roll over the agreements that they have, that the EU has got with the other countries in Africa, because we will need to have those agreements in place to enable us also to accumulate with our other countries in Africa. That's a very important policy tool that we think we negotiated in the Economic Partnerships Agreement to enhance integration.
To Honourable Mishlova's point, I think that is, in terms of Cabinet, as soon as we finalise the agreement, we will then advise the Chair immediately, and then, as I said, if it could be then also expedited. We've got authority from Cabinet already to proceed with the negotiations, and they've agreed to it within the certain parameters, and as I said, we are within those parameters, because it's really a rollover agreement. It's no worse off than what we had. It's actually better than what we had. So we can come straight to Parliament, and we will then, as I said, the team will have to reach an agreement on Friday, and we will then, as I said, the ministers want to have it by the first week of March, and I think we will meet those deadlines. We will, as I said, bar anything, but we will meet those deadlines.
DG, would you just also cover that point raised earlier about the entry into force requirements, you know, the number of countries in SACU that would need to sign before the agreement can enter.
No, we all together, the negotiations is all together with SACU plus Mozambique. We are all, it's one negotiation, so we will all sign so at the same time, and we will all agree.
Well, I think, yes, Ms. Kruger?
Maybe just to highlight one issue. All of the SACU countries does not need to ratify at the same stage. So once South Africa is ratified and the European, the United Kingdom is ratified or said that they are ready to provisionally apply the agreement will enter into force if they've left the UK between South Africa and the EU. But then the other countries, as they ratify the agreement, will enter into force. But the intention is that we all ratify at the same time or during the same time, that it enters into force for all of us at the same time.
Honourable McPherson, your colleague, the Honourable Kuchalia, did raise issues, and we have been clarified. So we are going to move on then to the... Well, actually, you know, you did quite, as you are entitled to, attend to something else, but that's why it's useful for parties to have more than one member. to cover the issues concerned. Thank you. So we'd like to thank you, DG. We'd like to thank you, Chief Director, Ms. Kruger, and the team who are here. Thank you very much. The next one is the report item, is the report of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry on the Department of Trade and Industry second quarter financial and non-financial performance for the 2018-19 financial year. This was already distributed, and we asked members to go through it, but also if they could come back with certain conclusions and comments they may have. So we're not going to adopt it today. We're going to adopt it on Tuesday, but at least let's enable the staff to be given sufficient information to enable them to proceed. Page, Honourable Ms. Lawball.
Well, Chairperson, I was going to suggest that if there is any party that still wants to make submission, the staff should be given no later than tomorrow, the further submissions. But looking at the document, Chair, there is no substantive issue that is not actually truly reflected here. Like, because we dealt with the issues and the staff has covered it well. But with your indulgence, if there's still a feeling, because we're all invited to make some submissions so that they can factor them in, and I've learned that they've not received none. They've received nine, I mean. And if we can adopt this report no later by Tuesday, if there are people who still want to feel. But if there is nothing, people can indicate, because it's a straightforward report from our side.
Now, indeed, it is a straightforward report, and we did ask yesterday for people to come with their comments, etc., for staff to include. But, indeed, it does make it a lot more simple and easier if it's written down. And, in fact, most of the parties sitting here, as we talk, are parties that do put things in writing. The DA, the Freedom Front, the ANC. So, with the three of you here, we will, of course, inform the IFP who was here earlier. And we do need these comments, which expected to be in today, Honourable Ms. Lawball, as we know. But what we will allow is really to try and get them in Thursday afternoon at the latest so that staff can process it Friday and have it distributed, presumably by Friday afternoon, to members to check and to come back prepared on Tuesday. Would that be in order?
We can say on this draft report we must commend them. They've done a good job.
You have, and may I point out that they are the researcher is economist. The economist is not with us, the researcher, Ms. Madalani. She's, I think, just took some time off for her studies. So they were running a bit short under pressure, and I think it was a joint effort led by yourself, Ms. Sheldon, was that right? That was Mr. Herman's, etc. Thank you very much for this. We do ask you, though, to always do a double check on your figures again, just to make absolutely certain they are correct. Having said that, can we then, we've adopted the minutes we should have adopted. There will be more minutes to adopt on Tuesday. Is that correct? Fine. There is one other issue that has come up that in correspondence, which you do need to be informed of, and that was the request the request by the European Union to engage with Committee of Trade and Industry, and it gave a period for this while they were here. What was it, please, Mr. Hermans? Maybe you can just deal with that.
Chair, we received a letter from the European, a delegation from the European diplomatic community to have a meeting with the PC on trade and industry, and as you said, the 6th of February, the committee wasn't able to see to that request. The chairman has proposed an alternative date of the 19th of February to have this engagement. We are still awaiting confirmation from the EU diplomatic community if they are available, and might be able to keep members informed about the outcome of that.
It just means adjusting the agenda on that particular day, Tuesday. I think that's the only other correspondence we have. Yes, Honourable Montash?
Chair, we hear what the Secretary said, but we would love to be made to understand whether there are specific issues that they want us to talk on.
In fact, I was saying to the committee secretary, that we certainly will make the letter available, but essentially it is within the context of the EU-SA summit held late last year. I'm sure some of you remember it. It was referred to by the minister, DG, November 2018, etc. And the commissioner, the EU commissioner, Maelstrom, I think Commissioner Maelstrom, is in the country and has been for some time. But as I say, it's they made certain suggestions to us. They've also got certain joint ministerial meetings and so on and so forth. But essentially, it is to, engage with us to share the summit itself, which we have done on a regular basis with them. So nothing more, nothing less, the SAEU summit. And I think last year there was a reference from DTI on the matter that when it was taking place itself. That's all that I have to report at this moment. And I would like to thank the members of the committee for being here. And also the department, all of you here this morning. And simply to indicate that we are looking towards Tuesday. Is that correct? Tuesday, the 19th of February, 11 o'clock to 13:30, and that's a briefing of the ECIC on its annual report, as well as the third quarterly, etc., that we'll be doing, and the consideration of minutes. And then you've got Wednesday, the budget speech, and many members have asked if, you know, on that morning, if they could be freed up to be given the opportunity to attend the closed session of the budget. And unless we're doing bills, we generally make that time available to members of trade and industry, so you have that. But what we have been asked by finance, people sometimes just rock up, as it were, thinking, I'm a member of parliament, you know, I can. The challenge is not a question of not wanting you there. It's a space issue. So they really would like the names, you know, of the people who will be the members who will be attending. And once you go in, you cannot come out. You'll go straight into the house. So I ought to make that clear to members, all right? But I think many of you are aware of that. Thank you. Meeting adjourned till Tuesday in room V119. Thank you.